Welcome to Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. All this week on Vermont Edition, we've been introducing you to some of the major party candidates who are challenging incumbents this November. Today, we continue with our series with two more candidate interviews. We're going to start with Scott Milne, who's seeking the Republican nomination for governor. And then later in the program, I'll talk with Marina Brown, who is the Liberty Union candidate for lieutenant governor. If you'd like to join the conversation today at Vermont Edition, give us a call, 1-800-639-2211. Perhaps you have some questions for GOP gubernatorial hopeful Scott Milne. Do you think any of the Republican candidates have a reasonable chance of winning in November? What would be the top issues? What are the key issues for you in this gubernatorial campaign? We'd love to hear from you today. Give us a call at 1-800-639-2211. You can always send us an email at vermontedition@vpr.net, but better yet, give us a call, 1-800-639-2211. Scott Milne, great to have you on the program today.
Thank you, Bob.
Now, Scott, there were a number of high-profile people considering running for the GOP gubernatorial nomination. They decided not to do it. You did. As you looked at this race, what were some of the factors that you looked at and said, you know, this is a doable race?
Thank you, Bob. And first, I don't know if it is it a compliment or how do I take it that I'm sandwiched in a VPR fund drive? I think it's a good thing. And if you're supporting Milne for governor in 2014, go into VPR and give him $20.14, and maybe that'll inspire him to have me back on to talk more about issues as this campaign progresses, because what we're going to have is a campaign that's very much focused on issues, not focused on personalities, although hopefully I'll have the opportunity to get to know people and let them know a little bit about myself and my family so that they feel I'm a trustworthy and capable and able to lead Vermont. I think, Bob, your questions hits right to the essence of it. When I made the decision to run, finally, I've been thinking about it since April. Pondered it. You know, there were a few changes with what the race was going to look like. But at the end of the day, on filing day, leading up to filing day, two things. One, I think that this race is winnable. And I see a narrow but widening path to victory. Even over the last week, it becomes more obvious that this is a very winnable race. And secondly, I, although Peter Shumlin is not a person I know well, but is a great, probably one of the better politicians we've seen in Vermont for many, many years. There's a lack of leadership and a lack of accomplishment. And he's had two tries, you know, fool me twice, and this is the third try. So I'm hopeful that folks will, A, look at me, see if I'm capable, and B, look at the leadership of the Shumlin administration and think maybe it's time to take a chance on another horse.
So you said, particularly in the last week, you looked at this race and think that it's even more winnable than previously. What's happened in the last week to increase your odds of victory?
Well, I think even today, if you look at the news, Vermont economy is, although we've got a stagnant national economy that's growing at about 2%, I think today's news is Vermont's economy is, growing at 1/3 the rate of the federal economy. And I think it's going to become more apparent to people as we talk about issues and look under the surface of what's really going on, that the economy is issue number one. The other issues that are important to people, health care, education, property taxes, really all come back to the economy. I think it's inarguable that there's not at least a perception that Vermont is not a good place for business. And perceptions sometimes can be changed, but perceptions very easily become reality. So there's a perception that we're not a good place to be for if you want to start a business or even if you have a business. And I would argue that, you know, there's one easy way to change that perception, and it's vote for Scott Milne, if I'm fortunate enough to win the primary when we get to November 4th.
Now, not everybody in Vermont is familiar with you. You're not really a household name yet. Just take a second here and let our listeners know a little bit about your background, what you want them to know about Scott Milne.
Sure. First, I think I hope people believe me or get the opportunity to meet me and believe me as this campaign progresses. I love Vermont. I didn't get that from the bumper sticker. I got that from my grandparents, from my parents, from growing up in Vermont. I really believe that Vermont is a beautiful place with all kinds of assets, you know, not to refer to, you know, our natural resources as assets, but they're great assets upon which we can build great communities and a great economy. But by far, our most precious asset is our young people. And the challenge we have right now is the economy that we have in Vermont has turned our greatest export into our young people. And again, perceptions become reality. If we want to change the perception that Vermont is not a good place for young people, I would suggest that a good place to start is by changing the governor.
Let's go to our callers and start with Doug in Brattleboro. Hi, Doug. Welcome to the program.
Yes, good morning. Thank you so much for taking my call. So the question to Mr. Milne is if he supports Obamacare, and if so, why, and if not, why not?
What are your feelings about the Affordable Care Act?
Thanks for the call, Doug. What I believe about what the Vermonters that I'm talking to, and you know, I'll be out at a Lake Monsters game again tonight, I hope, talking to more people and hearing more ideas and understanding more about what people want is going to be important. What I believe, the Affordable Care Act is law. So it's a national law, and I think, you know, we've got a good federalist system where states get to do a lot of things on their own. But in my opinion, one thing states don't do is violate federal law. So Affordable Care Act is a law. It basically sets up exchanges. Many states took the option of setting up an exchange that was optional for people. Vermont took the option of putting Obamacare on steroids, taking all kinds of risks that I think are not warranted. If I could just step back, one fundamental difference I have with the way that the Shulman administration has used the Vermont economy over the last 6 years is basic businesses, you need to, if you're going to take a risk, you need to understand what the downsides and upsides are. There was very little upside for Vermont. Now, for America, for having a state that could prove that you could do things, maybe it was good, but we should have cut a better deal with the federal government if we're going to do that. The exchange is here to stay. I think that what we need to do going forward is, A, understand what the price tag is going to be for moving forward further. Governor Shumlin's administration missed a legal deadline, I would argue, also a moral obligation to let us know how that was going to be funded. He said 4.5 years to come up with a plan. He still doesn't have a plan. There's another, when you talk, Bob, about what's changed in the last week, there's another story in the paper today that it's going to be January now before we come up with a plan. Oh, wow. Coincidentally, that's after the next election. So this will be the third election of, trust me, I'll get it taken care of for you next time. I'd like to understand what it is. And to answer your question specifically about the Affordable Care Act, if it's providing choices to people, providing access to everybody to health care, protecting doctors and nurses and healthcare professionals so they're getting paid adequately and affordable, I'm in favor of it. But there's a lot of work to be done by the folks that are proposing all this before we can understand that.
Today on the program, our guest is Republican gubernatorial hopeful Scott Milne. Our phone number is 1-800-639-2211. We're going to talk a little bit more about health care. Your thoughts? What are the big issues in this year's gubernatorial campaign? You can let us know by giving us a call at 1-800-639-2211. Well, as you know, Governor Shumlin would like to implement a single-payer system in Vermont in 2017. You've been talking about you'd like to see how it's going to be paid for. Let's look at the concept of single-payer. Are you for that?
I think, first of all, Bob, even if you read the paper today or yesterday, that Governor Shumlin is for the concept of single-payer already has backtalk on it. Lawrence Miller's coming out with this new consultants that they're going to hire to study it to come up with a plan in January. And if you look in that, there's a lot of double talk about whether it's going to move forward or not. So if Governor Shumlin, and I know he's got, you know, my friend Bob Sherman writing op-eds saying he's totally for it and stuff like that. But talk is cheap and walk is walk. What I see coming from the Shumlin administration is a lot of talk and not a lot of walk. So I don't know what single payer is. I don't know whether I have an opinion that it's going to work. I think what we want is a healthcare system that provides access to people, provides cost containment, and enables people to make their own choices about who they're going to use for doctors.
Well, let's try it this way. You're a small business person. I think you have 75 employees, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people who are working for you. Do you think it'd be a good idea to divorce their healthcare coverage from their place of work? So when we talk about single payer, if we describe it as all Vermonters would have healthcare just based on the fact that they're Vermonters and it's not connected to their place of work, and at the same time, there would be a public financing system on this so that people would pay premiums based on their ability to pay, and all Vermonters would have access to healthcare. Would that be a good approach?
It's if it was that simple, Bob, it would be an interesting idea. But there's over $2 billion price tag attached to that. There's all kinds of knee bones connected to the thigh bones of implementing that, with whether it's going to chase jobs out of Vermont, what kind of jobs it's going to chase out, what kind of jobs it's going to attract, the economy, getting the economy on track so that struggling middle age wage earning Vermonters in private business are seeing rising wages and we're seeing more jobs created is the most important thing. Figuring out a healthcare system that's going to be a catalyst for that would be the primary filter through which I would do. Once we are talking about accessibility to healthcare for everybody, cost containment, choice of what doctors you want to use.
So would it be your inclination to stay more with the system that we already have rather than making a major change?
In general, I think the exchange idea makes sense. We've got all kinds of money invested in this Vermont Health Connect. I think there's some smart people over there. One of the things that I think is a minor accomplishment of the Shumlin administration in this last session, which was touted as a big deal, is this whistleblower protection. My sense is, as we see this campaign unfold, we'll maybe hear some ideas coming out of people at Vermont Health Connect about mistakes that have been made that maybe haven't been reported in the press that can be used as learning opportunities to figure out how to tweak it a little bit so that it makes sense going forward.
Let's go back to our callers and talk to Martha, who is calling from Shrewsbury. Hi, Martha. Welcome to the program. Martha, you there? Well, we'll try to get back to Martha as soon as we can. If you've got a question for our guest today, and that's gubernatorial hopeful Scott Milne, he's one of three people running in the Republican primary, you can give us a call at 1-800-639-2211. Let's try Tom, who's calling from Stratton. Hi, Tom. Welcome to the program.
Yes, good afternoon. Thanks for the program. Comment and question is, you know, how Vermont could transition in a more business-friendly character. And most of the people I talk to, you know, really feel the taxes are onerous, the licensing and other business requirements are rather onerous. I think the healthcare system in Vermont is very progressive and helpful. You know, local clinics, low-cost options, preventative, natural healing, instead of dealing with a problem once it becomes serious. But, you know, Vermont was once, you know, very, very active in animal agriculture, you know, sheep, beef cattle, dairy. We're much bigger than they are today. And is there any way that, you know, that could be encouraged to bring back some of the farming that has been lost?
Thanks for the call, Tom. What I would say is, you know, giving the Shumlin administration credit, you know, this microbrewing, you know, renaissance that's going on in Vermont, I think has tentacles attached that will be good for agriculture. I think some of the farm-to-table initiatives that started under the Douglas administration have been, you know, well managed by the Shumlin people. And in general, you know, I think a truth of business and life is that if we're not changing, we're probably dying. And, you know, we just need – I agree with you. What we need, first of all, is to change the perception that Vermont is not good for business. That change in and of itself will – do wonders for the Vermont economy if it's well managed. And that's something that voters can do with one vote in November. Unfortunately for me, I need a vote in August as well.
just wanted to go back for healthcare for a second because I'm not sure if it's entirely clear to me how you feel about single payer. As you look at the single payer approach, do you say no way, no how? I mean, that was certainly the position that other Republican candidates, certainly Randy Brock in 2012, took. So are you saying no way, no how, or, well, maybe let's look at the financing. Let's see how this whole thing gets put together, which is kind of the approach that the Republican Lieutenant Governor Phil Scott is taking.
Sure. Good question, Bob. I'm optimistic that Randy Brock and I will become close working allies over this campaign. I was quoted by another reporter as saying I was agnostic about single payer, and I got a message right away from my mom, who you know, who's a former state legislator, Marion Milne, who is very clearly along with everybody else in my family in my kitchen cabinet on this. And she goes, just exactly what does agnostic mean? And I thought back to my dad telling me probably when I was 5 years old about Adlai Stevenson and how he was probably one of the smarter presidential candidates we had had and how he used words that people didn't understand. And it just made Eisenhower very, very capable of smoking him in two consecutive elections there in the 50s. So I won't use agnostic again to describe how I feel about healthcare as far as single payer goes. But I'm more in line with what Phil Scott says, which is skeptical, I don't think is the right word. I think it's a pragmatic decision that we need to understand exactly what it's going to cost, what the benefits are going to be, and what the risks are going to be. My intuition now very much is that the cost and the benefits are not going to be worth the risk.
Today on the program, we're talking to Scott Milne, one of three people seeking the Republican gubernatorial nomination in the party's August primary. Our phone number, 1-800-639-2211. This is Vermont Edition on VPR. Welcome back to Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. With me today, Scott Milne, one of the three people seeking the Republican gubernatorial nomination in the party's primary in August. Our phone number, 1-800-639-2211. If you've got a question, what are the big issues that you think should be considered and debated in this year's gubernatorial campaign? 1-800-639-2211. I want to talk to you about property taxes and spending on education. As you've noted, many people have noted, Vermont has a declining student enrollment over the past 10 or 12 years. You've said that Governor Shulman has, quote, sidestepped this difficult local issue. But during the session, he did support legislation to encourage school districts to consolidate in the next few years as a way to provide educational opportunities to all students and to save money down the road. That approach was supported in the Vermont Senate. Does it not go far enough?
I think it strikes to the first question you asked of why am I running. After that, I love Vermont, and I think there's important things that need to be changed about the direction of Vermont is that Governor Shumlin's leadership and performance has not been adequate. With huge majorities in both houses, a governor that was elected with huge popularity for this biennium, that he supported it but didn't get it done, to me indicates a lack of leadership. If he supported it, it should have been done. So when we look at what's wrong with the education system, let's start with what's right about it. We got a lot of great teachers. We've got a lot of great schools. But I've got a house that I've been in for 20 and a half years, and my property taxes have gone up 700%. There's a lot of people that are in boats similar to that, and there's a lot of people that are just having trouble affording their property taxes. So we need to come up with a leadership from the governor's office that's going to reach out to the House and the Senate and get something tough on the table. And I don't think it should be coming in, you know, February of the second half of the biennium. It'll be coming in February of the first year of the biennium if I'm fortunate enough to get elected.
Well, now, we saw the Senate take one approach on school district consolidation. We saw the House take a very different approach on that issue. I mean, is it really fair to say that because a bill didn't pass, it was because of a lack of leadership when Democrats in the House and Democrats in the Senate had a very different point of view, and they're not necessarily in lockstep with whatever Governor Shumlin wants? Is it fair to pin it all on him?
You know, I can't speak for Dean Davis, but I would say yes.
And why is that? Do you think he should be able to convince the houses and the House and the Senate what to do?
I think President Eisenhower once said, leadership is getting people to do what you want them to do because they want to do it. So I think if the Shumlin administration thought this was a priority over GMO labeling and whistleblower protection and figuring out how to fund a marijuana program, it should have been something that they were engaged in early on and getting a bill through the House that the House and Senate knew was a priority for them. The other priority should have been to live up to their promise about coming up with a funding mechanism for the healthcare system.
So you said if you're elected governor, you'd have a bill during the first half of the first year of the legislative session. What needs to change as you look at the way that Vermont finances education today? What are the big obstacles that you think need to be removed, and how would you change the current system?
Well, in general, Bob, I think that's a great question. If you think back, it was only 25 years ago that there were still one-room schoolhouses in Vermont. Folks were up in arms that our education system was going to be much worse if we didn't have the one-room schoolhouses anymore. And then we had a very similar discussion over the last 25 years about union school districts. I don't think there's too many people that are sending their kids to U32, which is a few miles from here, or you know, to some of the other great union schools around Vermont now, that some of the fears that were raised were warranted back then. I think now what we're sort of maybe clinging to is we can't change what we have. And as I said earlier, I've been reasonably successful in a very, very challenging business in the travel industry over the last 20 years, one of the really first industries affected by the changes in e-commerce and the globalization of information exchange. And we've embraced very much a philosophy that if you're not changing, you're dying. So we need to have open eyes and open minds about what changes can positively affect our school systems. The problem that we have is that because we've got an economy that's not attracting jobs and we've got some, you know, natural demographic things going on, our school populations dropped something like 20% in the last 15 years, and costs, depending on how you calculate them, are up about 60%. That's got to change.
So do you see something like school district consolidation as being a good thing, to go from the more than 200 school districts that we have now to narrow it down to perhaps 40 or 50? And even if that means perhaps closing some of the smaller schools, is that just inevitable?
What I would say is that I think what you're getting from the Shumlin administration right now regarding schools is a sidestep. This implicit or explicit promise that don't worry, if you like your school, you can keep your school. If the folks that were around in the 70s, Dean Davis, for instance, were saying that to everybody that had a one-room schoolhouse, we wouldn't have the education system that we have today. So I don't know what's off the table, except that everything is on the table. We need to get a team of people together that are smart, care about education, care about teachers, care about schools, and figure out something. And my guess is it can't be a win for everybody, or it's going to be a loss for everybody.
Let's go back to our callers and talk to John in Stratford. Hi, John. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. Just got a couple questions. One is on school consolidation. I would just urge you, if you're elected, to take a more bottom-up approach where there's lots of local input rather than a Montpelier approach, top-down approach. Secondly, on property taxes, the governor in this session increased property taxes by shifting underfunded teachers' health retirement onto local property taxes. We also put $10 million more property tax per year for preschool education. And yet it would seem that and then he complains about school boards not keeping property taxes down. As governor, would you try to limit how many new programs go on property taxes and maybe look at some of the programs that have been added to the state education fund over the years since it was first started, and maybe see if those are still applicable?
Great question, John. I think you hit the nail right on the head. One example, and Bob, and this is not personal at all with Governor Shulman. I have a lot of respect for him and his family and what he's done in his life. But where we have this issue of pre-K education, which I think is costing $6,000 a student, and it's optional. So if half the kids that we think are going to come, it's $12,000 a student. It's one of these programs where the overhead is basically set, and then we divide it by how many kids show up. That we moved forward and implemented that without putting an overall. And there were a lot of people that thought that was great, and I happen to think that most of the things that brings to the table are legitimate and good, but it should have been part of a restructuring so that it's not just here's another thing we're adding on. We should have put it in the whole soup mix and come up with a plan for restructuring the school system before we added in that $36 million. And some of the other things you're talking about, John, are exactly that. It seems like the way people get elected these days is having a special interest, tell them they want something and getting it done. And it's got to be more of a give and take, and we got to look at what's going to be good for everybody in Vermont. And that's going to be my primary goal and focus and commitment to people, if you trust me, with the office of governor for 2 years.
The governor said that he thought that the cost of the early education program, that there would be savings down the road because students wouldn't need some things like special education services and programs like that. Do you think that's not true?
I think that every good politician seems, unfortunately, these days to say that everything's going to save money down the road. You know, we look at savings in 10-year chunks and we start spending the money the next week. My sense is there will be savings down the road. I think the general aspect of the early childhood education is well-founded. But I think before we added $36 million into our school budget, into taxpayers' permanent liabilities and obligations, we should have looked at what perhaps could have been an offset for that, and we didn't do that. We just added it in. So I am in total agreement with you, John. And if you want to form a Milne for Governor campaign committee down there, I'd love to have you on board.
You know, one thing that some people who are critical of the governor and property taxes, they point to the program of income sensitivity, where people up to about $90,000 or so households are able to pay their education tax based on their income and not the value of their property. What do you think of that program?
I think that, we have a Brigham decision. We have a very sound tradition of strong courts in Vermont. We have a Brigham decision, which triggered Act 60, which, brought about the income sensitivity. And I think that taxes should be based on people's ability to pay. So how we get from where we are now to something that works better and is going to enable us to have a business-friendly reputation around the globe, because we're not just talking anymore about competing with New Hampshire, and now we're talking about competing with South Carolina. We've got a global economy. Vermont, on a global scale, is one of the greatest places on earth. We need some out-of-the-box thinking that's going to enable us to attract investment, attract resources, that's going to enable our young people to be able to raise their families here and be successful here and see their families have a great opportunity of staying here. That's what it was like 50 years ago in Vermont, and that's not what it's like now.
We got about a minute left. Some people think income sensitivity is just leading to the approval of school budgets left and right, and therefore it should be scaled back. A number of Republicans in the legislature believe that. I'm just trying to get a sense in a brief amount of time that we have left. Do you think income sensitivity is a good thing, or should it be scaled back a little bit?
I think that people's Republican tradition is, free enterprise, making sure folks that are least able to take care of themselves are taken care of by the government. People paying taxes based on their ability to pay is important. One of the problems with the school funding system is that people can pass a budget and other people can pay it. So we need to take a look at that. As I told somebody else, if we could just sit around and have dinner and just have whatever we wanted and not have to worry about paying the bill, we'd all be having nicer dinners when we're out at restaurants. And that's one of the problems with the school system that we need to look at as a comprehensive big picture. And the school system is very much tied to the economy, which is the most important thing that I'll be talking about over the next few months.
You're involved in a primary contest for the GOP gubernatorial nomination with Emily Payton and Steve Berry. We'll be following that contest in the weeks ahead. We look forward to having you back on the program during the course of the summer. Scott Milne, thanks for being on Vermont Edition today.
Thank you, Bob Kinzel. It's a pleasure.
Coming up next, I'll talk with Marina Brown, who is the Liberty Union candidate for lieutenant governor. This is Vermont Edition on VPR. Welcome back to Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel. There are three major party candidates seeking the office of lieutenant governor this year. Incumbent Republican Phil Scott is seeking re-election, and progressive Dean Corn has qualified for public financing for his campaign. The third candidate is Marina Brown, and she's the Liberty Union Party candidate for this office, and she joins us right now to discuss her campaign. Marina, welcome to Vermont Edition.
Thank you.
So, Marina, tell our listeners a little bit about yourself. What would you like them to know about you?
Well, I've been involved with Liberty Union since 1987 when I helped Herb Lewin get into the primaries. I'm an ardent socialist, and I support the rights of minorities to be treated fairly. I'm an internet engineer, and I advocate internet neutrality, and I believe that anywhere that electricity goes, there should be free wireless internet. The internet is, in some ways, as essential to commerce and to thought and to just basic society as the roads themselves. It's a common good. I believe everyone should have. The Liberty Union platform says that transportation and phone services should be affordable. I go a little bit farther and say that the internet should be some sort of service, should be free for everyone to use and have.
And what are your thoughts about internet privacy rights? Is that a concern of yours?
Yes, it is. I actually teach surveillance self-defense classes to teach people how to defend themselves against snoops, people who might want to steal their information, or the government itself. People who just don't want anyone to know their information. It's intolerable that the government is spying on us, and that cable companies will spy on your traffic. It's not acceptable. And that also goes, I believe, that with medical records. I believe medical records should be encrypted by a person's own cryptographic key if they so wish, so that they can truly keep it private, because medical records have become a commodity that are sold. They've stripped people's names from it, and then they sell it for research, and I don't feel that that's respecting people's privacy.
So tell us, what were the motivating factors for you to decide you wanted to be a candidate this year for lieutenant governor?
Well, I'm a Liberty Union Party member, and we needed a full slate. And what the Liberty Union Party does is it provides a service to the voters. It gives them an alternative to the Democrats and the Republicans. We are, because we're unlikely to be elected, we're not bogged down in the compromises of, will this get me elected or not? We can give a very pure socialist message, and we are uncompromising about it. It's a service. I'm not particularly interested in power or office for myself, but I feel that there is a need for the service to provide a service for people to be able to vote their consciences.
So aside from being the presiding officer of the Vermont Senate, the lieutenant governor has very few other specific duties, and this allows the person to highlight certain issues that they feel should be some of the top priorities in the state of Vermont. If you were elected, which issues would you want to put a focus on?
Well, for universal socialized medicine. And what differentiates me from the progressive type platform is I believe in community-controlled clinics, not just a nice thing being done for people who can't afford medical care. The communities who need medical care should be able to control the clinics. There's a lot. I live in the Northeast Kingdom, which has a serious crisis in health care, and there are problems with doctors and with the way people perceive they're treated by doctors that are working for Dartmouth Hitchcock or some other big organization. Healthcare clinics controlled by the communities, which is the same as the Young Lords Party and the Black Panther Party advocated in the 60s and 70s.
So would you see that there'd be a healthcare clinic in every community? Is that the way that it would be established?
That's what I feel should be done, which is the old Black Panther parties would say and Young Lords would say a clinic on every corner. In Vermont, obviously, it's more spread out. So, you know, you'd have a clinic in any reasonable town. Basically, I guess within every 10 miles of anyone would be a reasonable way to do that. But I'm looking blue skies. The details of implementing it would have to, you'd have to look at it more carefully than just a 5-10 minute interview.
Sure. You know, I'm also wondering if the whole issue of economic equality is a top priority for you.
It is. We don't want equal opportunity. We're much more for equal outcomes from each according to their means and to each according to their needs. Which I have a friend here who's disabled who's been helping me out with a greenhouse that we're going to be growing peppers together. And she can't do as much as my wife or I can do, but she's able to get just as much a share of the product as anyone else. I do that in my own life. Yes?
Yes. So when you're thinking about things like health care and the other kind of programs that you would like to see the government involved in, how would you pay for them?
Well, I mean, there's a lot. A lot of tax money goes towards war. The Liberty Union Party is an anti-war party. We're pretty adamant about that. We don't want money spent on defense. I mean, Vermont is a small place. You get rid of F-35s from Burlington, and all the blood and treasure that goes into war. There would be a lot more money to pay for these things. That would be a start of paying for services like these, and we believe in a steep progressive tax. I don't believe that poor people's tar paper shacks should be taxed at all, but I do believe that the big mansion up at Jay, they should be paying a much larger share because they have it. It's a standard socialist progressive tax advocation that we do.
And so as you enter this campaign, what's your outlook? You said earlier that perhaps you don't have a great chance to win, but you want to get some ideas out there for people to consider. Is that the goal?
Well, we win if we get on the ballot and if we're able to reach people. As I said, we don't have to worry about the compromises that a Democrat or Republican or progressive has to do to get into office. We can advocate a better society where we can look at a blue sky solution.
Okay.
Without being compromised by the political process, which I feel is in itself corrupted by money and power.
Unfortunately, we're going to have to end the conversation right then. Marina Brown is the Liberty Union Party candidate for lieutenant governor this year. Great to talk to you, and we hope to have you back on the program in the future.
Thank you very much.
That is Vermont Edition for today. Vermont Edition is produced by Patty Daniels, Rick Sengary, and Sage Van Wing, with production assistance from Catherine Hayes. Mary Williams directed the program. Our executive producer is John Van Hoosen. I'm Bob Kinzel. Have a great weekend.